Welcome to Tuesday Topics. Tuesday Topics is a program where we discuss a specific issue that the group of folks who are here the week before decide on at the end of our program. Tuesday Topics is actually recorded from a discussion that's held in a live chat room. That live chat room is made possible by the generosity of Talking Communities, who are responsible for producing a program called iVocalize. Tonight on Tuesday Topic, we are going to be returning to the issue of legislation. But this time, we're going to be talking about the things that we may need to do to get ready for the new session. Perhaps looking at some of the dynamics that may have changed as a result of the election. Perhaps looking at things that we need to do to get our issues put forward. Perhaps identifying some specific issues that are blindness related and that we might want to focus on for the next legislative session. I suspect we'll also take a look at what the difference between advocating at the local level, at the state level, and at the national level is, because there are some substantial differences and they determine a lot how it is that we can best advocate for what it is that we want for people who are blind. So, I guess let's begin with a kind of a generic question. Let's ask each of the folks who are here whether they've actually been involved in legislative advocacy in the past. And could you describe a little bit what that was like?
I voted in this previous election, presidential election. And there were no major issues or anything. I went in, I cast my ballot, I came out, he turned it in, and all was well. So I had a pretty good experience, and actually it was my first time voting, so I'm very proud of that.
Thanks, Matthew. And that was Matthew from Ohio. And Matthew is a first-time participant in Tuesday Topics, and we're very glad to have you with us, Matthew. How about somebody else talking about their experiences with legislative advocacy?
Good evening, folks. As Matt has done, I've voted. Good to see him in here. I've voted ever since probably for about 40 years. It's when I was 25, I think, in 66 election was the first one. The first times I did it, of course, back when we had the lever, I think it was before the punch cards, my dad used to come in with me, and he'd show me which way, like if I wanted to vote for one candidate or the other, he'd show me where to go with that, and then he would do that when the punch cards came out, like where to guide my hand, like where the if I want the Republican candidate, the Democrat, and then I punch the one that I choose. As far as being involved with any campaigns, I haven't done that. I did some accessible voting by way of the computer in the Democratic primary here in Michigan, but that was something that I think the NFB had something to do with the trying out, so I did that.
Well, Paul, this is Debbie Grubb from Bradenton, Florida, and I've been involved in state legislation for quite some time now. When I lived in Maryland, we were instrumental in getting a Braille bill passed, and we played a role in getting the Maryland White Cane Law better enforced by getting some stronger penalties added to it for those who disobey it, and by getting other people brought in to the law besides people who are just blind and visually impaired. And in another legislative attempt, the ACB of Maryland became involved in a group called the Maryland Disabilities Forum. And when we had people running for the governor in our state, we were one of the groups that the candidates came to see, and they spoke to us, and we made sure that there was a disabilities platform, plank in their platform. So involved in legislation in not only getting bills passed, but also in making sure that politicians and legislators knew that we were out there and that we were a force to be reckoned with.
Yeah, it sounds like Debbie is the true meaning of what an advocate, I think, should be. I think she had mentioned a couple of weeks ago, I think just before the election, that whether or not the our choice of person wins the elections that we just had. I think probably as disabled people and blind people, we need to woo those people, try to get in touch, keep in touch with them, to show them or make sure that they know what our needs are, and see what they can do to advocate on our behalf for those people, I guess.
This is Alice from Brunswick, Georgia, and I actually got interested in the legislative process back in high school. I was fortunate enough, when I lived in Indiana, they had every year what they called a Hoosier Girl State, and it was the opportunity between your junior and senior year to go and play government for a week at one of the colleges. So that was kind of my first experience in it. Like Debbie, I've been involved in state legislation concerning some guide dog issues. I've also been involved in local legislation. When I was living in Savannah, was very instrumental in getting somebody with a disability onto our transit board. And then, of course, I have gone to Washington for the ACB legislative seminar several times. And also, when I worked at the Independent Living Center, have gone and taken part, which that, I have to admit, that was probably my most fun, was when we did the march back when, I forget now exactly which one. It was one of those times they were contesting the ADA, I know, and we made a strong appearance there in Washington. So, and, of course, we're already this year gearing up for several blind-related issues and deaf-blind-related issues in our state legislation this year.
I don't know. Does everybody seem to be happy with how the ADA has turned out in our behalf in the past 10 or so years?
Gary, that may be a topic for another Tuesday. By the way, guys, that's the mystery voice from Michigan, Mr. Gary Wood. And welcome, Gary. We're glad to have you with us. Alice and Debbie and or Matt or Gary or Rachel, come to that. Have any of you noticed very much difference between working at the state level and working at the national level and working at the local level? And if you have, how would you describe those differences?
Well, I think working at the local level is very interesting, because sometimes it doesn't equate into legislation, but you can get things accomplished on the local level sometimes by simply talking to people and writing letters and getting on different boards. Right now in Manatee County, we're working on pedestrian safety and for everybody, people who walk, people who bike, and we're going to put on a roundtable discussion, which is going to be on the county TV channel. And I talked the board into having a whole segment of that program deal with the unique needs of people with disability in terms of pedestrian safety and access to our streets and highways. And so I think in many instances, it's easier to get to know a mayor or a member of your county council. County commission meetings are open, or city council meetings are open. You can get in there and you can talk to people. Many times, if you know somebody locally, it's an end to getting to know people on the state level, because most of your state politicians started somewhere locally and they represent the local community where you live still. So that's really good. When I got the Braille bill, I and several others of us got the Braille bill passed in Maryland, I made my initial contact through the Governor's Advisory Council for Individuals with Disabilities, because there was a Senator Garrett on there who was extremely interested in our needs, was interested enough that she came to 90% of the meetings and gave very savvy, sage advice to us when we were trying to get different issues brought before the governor or before the legislators. And so I went directly to her and talked to her, and she was one of the key sponsors of our bill and helped us get other people to sponsor it as well. I have found it's much more difficult nationally because there's so much more involved in national legislation, and it gets taken out of your hands. A state bill, or even working locally, you can keep your hands on things for most of the time, and you have a real say in what goes on. With a federal bill, with federal legislation, national legislation, if you're lucky enough to get somebody to sponsor the legislation that you want, you have very little say as to how it's going to look when it comes out on the floor. And so your hands-on, your ability to walk it through is vast limited. And I'd be real interested in hearing from people who have actually worked on national legislation. Like Alice, I've attended many of ACB's legislative seminars and have met locally or statewide with my national legislators in the past, but have never really had hands-on experience in shepherding through legislation on a national level.
This is Rachel from Orlando. My first experience with any kind of legislation really was on the national level when I participated in the close-up program in high school, where we also went to Washington for a week and really got a chance to see how things worked, and it was really interesting. Most of my experience has been on the local level, however, where the interesting thing about that is like Debbie said, you get a chance to know the people on the local level. You know them by name, they know you by name. And when we were working on some transportation issues, I had attended, along with several other people in the area, some hearings regarding the transportation issues. And it really seemed like they really were interested in what we had to say. They wanted to get the whole story, and we actually did get some information in Braille. I'm not sure whose doing that was, but I just felt like they really are more approachable and accessible on the local level.
One of the interesting things about working on the local level, too, is unlike both state and national entities, you only have one chamber to deal with because there's usually just a city commission. Now, granted, there are also people who work in county or city government, and it's actually very useful to get to know those folks as well because they are often the people who can make things happen and can tell you how best to approach commissioners. The local government system also tends not to rely so much on laws as they do on ordinances, which are very local in nature and very local in coverage, and seem to be a little bit easier to get passed than bills at the state or at the national level. One of the funny things is that ACB starts at the national level, where I think it's really difficult to shepherd anything, whereas perhaps we should be doing more at the local level, where I think in many cases you actually can have an impact on what happens.
ACB everything should begin with the local council for the blind, and I believe that I seem to be in agreement with everybody here that usually the local is better because you're more up close and personal to deal with the local officials than you are from the federal standpoint or state officials.
I'm wondering, in the case of when you're talking about the ACB or blindness-related issues or issues of interest to blind people, if it starts on the national level partly because if it wouldn't start on the local level, rather, because people feel like they need that national backing in order to do anything on the local level.
Well, what history has shown us is that most initiatives start at least on a state level and move up. For example, most states had some kind of law protecting the rights of people with disabilities, guaranteeing, for example, guide dogs, entree into public places, white cane laws, which, although they're not enforced as they should be, at least are on the books to guarantee our ability to access our streets and highways. And so most initiatives do start on the local at the state level. And what would really make ACB strong is if all of its affiliates were busily acting on the state level, where they live and where they work, to prepare us for entree into the national level through our national organization, it seems to me.
One of the things that that we can certainly consider is what we might be able to do in ACB to encourage more state activity. I mean, we always hoped that the training that we provided at national legislative seminars would translate into making people comfortable working at the state level. But for the most part, that really hasn't translated. And I think that perhaps we need to do a better job of helping affiliates identify some things that may need to be changed at the state level.
Paul, is there any? I mean, has there anything been found out as to why that is? Why it hasn't taken hold as well as it should have?
I think one of the reasons that I think it's amazing what some of our state organizations have done, but I think some of the problems that plague ACB affiliates, such as transportation, getting people together for meetings, it happens in local chapters, so you can imagine what it happens statewide. And some people in large states live quite far away from their state capital. I was thinking just how accessible state and local politics are. When I lived in Maryland, I met the governor several times. We talked to him when there was a problem with funding for the state library for the blind and physically handicapped. And in all the legislative seminars that I have ever been to for ACB, and I have made the appointments for most of those visits and have tried to do so as early as possible. And I have to tell you, I have never sat down and talked with one of the senators or one of the representatives about our issues. I have always spoken with aides. So I think that just goes to show you that national politics is really isolated from most of us. We rarely get the opportunity unless we really know somebody of great influence to sit down and talk with our national legislators as freely as we can with our local legislators and our state legislators.
What I kind of do find that is interesting, though, is at the national level, it seems like sometimes when an issue's up that, hurry, hurry, we got to respond to right now, it's easier to, for some reason, at least it seems that way to me, that it's easier to do at a national level than it seems to motivate and get people to do it and do those hurry-up phone calls at a state level. As for at the national level, I do know that every time we've gone down to meet with our people in Washington, we actually are pretty lucky here in Georgia. One of our senators and most always, at least, we meet with two or three of our reps while we're there and actually get to sit down and talk with them. The only senator we ever had problems with, and he, no matter what, you never got to see him. It was always an aide, and that was Zell Miller. So, but the others, they always, made it a point or try to at least, even if they only are there for 5 minutes, at least to give us 5 minutes of the time before the aide takes over to deal with the issues.
Well, when back in 95, I believe, or I tried to call some representatives about a state issue, a statewide to do with something, and that most of the cases, they did seem to. I did talk to their aides, and it seems like what they did said that they'll let the representative know of my concerns a lot of times. I mean, I haven't. There hasn't been a lot of cases where I've really had contact with the directly with the representative, it seems like.
Maybe it's actually as well a function of the size of the state. Florida is a pretty populous state, and it's also a state where there's probably an awful lot of lobbying going on at the national level. And so I would expect that both the representatives and the senators feel like their time is more tied up by the need to do those things. When you talk to folks from some of the smaller states where there aren't as many trillion voters as there are in Florida, people seem to have better luck actually seeing representatives I was fortunate enough to sit in on a meeting with Mississippi, in Mississippi, with Trent Lott when he was in fact the leader of the Senate, or certainly the leader of his party in the Senate, and extremely busy because the legislative session was in place. But he actually spent 10 or 15 minutes with us, and interestingly enough, knew a couple of the folks from Mississippi and knew their relatives and had a degree of closeness to the folks he represented that you certainly wouldn't expect to see in Florida. In terms of what we can do at ACB to encourage more action at a state level and at a local level, might involve trying to identify some things that need to be changed at the state level. The National Education and Legal Defense Service, NELDS, is an organization most of whose members are a part of ACB, and I originally got on their board as president of ACB and have remained there. And we are in the process of taking a look at all of the white cane laws in the country to try to see whether there actually is a model one that has more appropriate penalties, that defines things better than some of the others. And then we're looking at trying to design what we would regard as a model bill that we would then make available to state affiliates of the American Council of the Blind and other interested folks, with a view to trying to broaden the coverage of the white cane law so that it would be a little harder to simply ignore pedestrian deaths of blind folks, rather than, and also it would be more difficult to regard them as simply misdemeanors, but actually create some punishment for not being more careful of folks who are blind, who have just as much of a right to be on the road as anybody else does. And I think that may be an example of one of the things that we can perhaps do: identify problems that are specifically, I'll learn to speak, state-oriented, and then try to come up with some models that state affiliates can use, with a view to trying to get those pretty widely sold across the country. Do others think that might be an appropriate way to go?
Yeah, I think that would be appropriate. I think it's necessary to strengthen the white cane laws, and I think that people who do hit blind people with the cars, especially Wolf, should not be treated as a misdemeanor.
Well, I think it's an excellent way to go. I know one of the things that GDUI, Guide Dog Users Incorporated, has done is to come up with a handbook to assist our state affiliates and members who live in states without affiliates as well to get guide dog legislation, attack legislation passed. In other words, bills passed in the state that make it a crime for people to allow their dogs to attack guide dogs, or for people to attack or violate them in any way. And we have in our book a model law. And now that several states have laws, we have links on our website so that you can go see every law in every state that has one. So that has proved very successful in GDUI in giving people a model law to go by so that they can actually take something in their hands to their legislators. I know that it is so important to have what you want written out, because of course there are bill drafters in every state that have to go through the bill and plug in cogent state codes and that kind of thing. But to have a basic model for them to go by is so helpful. So I applaud NELDS and ACB for doing that, and know that with GDUI that has been a very successful and very helpful thing. Our Guide Dog Protection Law Handbook is probably the most popular, most asked for of all of our GDUI publications.
Another element that, Debbie, I know you were involved in, and I was here in Florida as well, which was very much put together in the same way, and interestingly enough, was put together with an immense amount of cooperation between the NFB and the ACB, and that was Braille bills. And I think now there are probably 30 or 35 states that actually have passed Braille bills?
What we found was that if people had any usable vision at all, their primary mode of reading was print, even if it took them 10 minutes to read a single page of print, which meant that they really weren't reading, and they weren't reading on a level with their peers. And we said that it was a student's civil right to be able to read on a level with his or her peers, and that in no other disability did technology take the place of actually being able to read the written word on a piece of paper. And so our Braille bill basically said that in conjunction with the parents and the teachers and working with the individualized education plan, the IEP, that a student would be taught the medium of reading which would allow him or her to best read on a level with his or her peers, and that that the prognosis of the eye condition would also be taken into account when this decision was made. For example, if a child had was a high partial and had every likelihood of remaining a high partial, then that child would be taught to read and write print. But if a child had some vision, but it was pretty obvious that in 4 or 5 years that vision was going to go, then that child would be taught Braille as well, so that he or she could read on a level with his or her peers.
Cool. Thanks, Debbie. Our bill in Florida was very much the same, and we also had language in ours, and I suspect you may have as well, with regard to textbooks in K through 12 and the requirement that publishers who want the textbooks to be adopted in the state having to provide in a file format to be determined their books so that they can be easily transformed into Braille or large print.
I can tell you here in Georgia that it certainly hasn't been the impact that we thought it would be in. And what's sad is it really does seem to be the fact that the vision teachers are just more happy to throw technology than to take the time to actually teach the children the Braille. So even though we worked, and here in Georgia too, we worked together with the NFB to get the bill through, but it, you know, as far as the enforcement, it doesn't really seem to be happening.
Thanks very much, Alice. I think that it is difficult to sometimes know how well a bill can be enforced when you don't actually have an opportunity to sort of follow it through its implementation. And I think that one of the things that we probably need to spend some more time on when we're looking at laws is trying to not only see that we get something that has wonderful language and you know, is as American as apple pie in the blindness field, like the Braille bills all were, but that we also somehow figure out some really specific ways of making Braille bills enforceable. You know, clearly in hindsight, I think it would have been interesting if, in conjunction with the passage of the Braille bill, or in conjunction with the releasing of the regulations for a Braille bill, we had actually been out there and talked with parents in some states about becoming directly involved in the IEP discussions as advocates for the children and also as advocates who would have helped the parents. I think that might have had an impact on how effective the Braille bill might have been.
Parents of blind people probably are probably reluctant into having them wanting to learn Braille because they would like them to see, if at all possible, the kids. But maybe that's kind of a strong statement. But to an earlier topic we had, like kids going to public schools versus schools of the blind, I think that may be one of the problems with the kids today, is that they go into public school and the teachers aren't equipped to teach Braille, I would think.
What are some of the issues that may be currently around at the state level, or perhaps issues that we ought to consider looking at as potential state legislation? Does anyone have any ideas? I know Debbie's talking about guide dog legislation, and there are still an awful lot of states that have not passed guide dog regulations that specifically increase the penalties for attacks on guide dogs or other service animals. And I certainly think there's room for those in virtually virtually every state. So that would certainly be something we could look at. Can anyone think of some other elements of legislation that might be appropriate?
I live in a cul-de-sac, but just outside of that, I think it would be interesting if they could, if the city would be willing to put a sidewalk on either side of that cul-de-sac so that I can at least walk, so that I can at least go out for walks when there's nice days out.
Thanks very much, Matt. There have been some interesting developments, in fact, with regard to the ADA and sidewalks, and I encourage you to take a look at some of those because cities do have some obligations insofar as sidewalks are concerned, and that actually is something that you can work on at a local level, and you really have the ability to put a fair amount of pressure on your community. It depends somewhat on the size of the community, how much you can ask for. But I think you live in a relatively large community, so you probably have a pretty good chance going through your public works department and then, if necessary, going through your local commission to try to encourage them to put more sidewalks in areas where people who are blind and visually impaired would like to have them so that their ability to go out and get around would be substantially increased.
That might be actually an excellent legislative process for you and your local chapter to work on there in Canton. Now, I wouldn't just stop that sidewalk at your cul-de-sac, though. I'd have that sidewalk go all the way to the Hall of Fame.
Well, it seemed like here in Lansing, we voted on to repair some sidewalks. And sometimes when I go for walks, sometimes you get some of these sidewalks that got these cracks in them and all that, and that can get your cane caught in it sometimes. I think that's probably something that has to be addressed from time to time, to make sure that they repair the sidewalks.
Well, what's interesting about this whole discussion of sidewalks is that it doesn't take legislation to make a sidewalk. That's where you can go to your county commission or your city council and talk to people. And many times there are funds for sidewalks, and especially if yours happens to be near a school. So, Paul, I think it'd be nice if we could get back on the subject of legislation, the purpose of the show.
The sidewalks issue, I think, has some value in that it helps us to focus on things that that don't necessarily have to be done legislatively and that can be done because there are already laws that at least suggest that they ought to happen. And there are also some ways to intervene to make them happen, rather than necessarily having to go for a legislative solution that's necessary with other things. So actually, I think the issue of sidewalks is kind of instructive to help us understand some of the differences between what we need legislation for and what we don't.
It kind of ties in the sense that, again, because it's your county commissioners, and where it might not take a law, where, again, it may have to go through your state legislator, depending. Like, I know when we were dealing in Savannah with putting somebody onto our transportation board, we went to the actual county commissioners, but we're told that it was actually state law and policy that actually set forth who served on the board or who was on the board. And so then what we had to do was then go and talk to our state legislatures and get them to actually change the ordinance that affected the city. So, but I just think that's a good place to start when you're thinking about trying to make change and how how the whole system works. When you start with something like sidewalks, you start there with your local county commissioners, you get the feel for that, and then work your way up.
Yeah, that makes sense. You got to start with the local folks, and that's who you're close to, and then work your way up to the national. Like
another area where some of our affiliates have had a lot of success, and indeed some of our local chapters, has been with the accessible pedestrian signals. And I think this is another instance where you don't actually need legislation. What you need is to build a willingness on the part of your public works department and your county commissioners to recognize that this is the right thing to do and do it.
Yeah, and with accessible pedestrian signals, if you can make a good relationship with every county has or city has a Department of Transportation that house the traffic engineers and that's where it comes to knowing where to go to get things done and with whom you can make friends. And that's why it's important, as we've said in other weeks, to join local boards, not just commissions for advisory bodies for paratransit, although they're certainly important. We need to be heard and seen on those bodies. But local boards that govern pedestrian issues and bicycle issues, there are local boards for so many issues. And if you have an interest in that area, those boards are always looking for people to join them, and especially looking for people to work. And so I think that is one of the key ways to get things done, especially locally. Sometimes legislation is your last resort rather than your first resort.
I think you're right, Debbie. And especially what I always tell everybody here is you want to be on the boards where the money is, where the real power decisions are made. And a lot of times that doesn't happen on your advisors. And that's why it is so important to get on the actual boards where the money is, where people are voting on those facts. And like you said, I think that's the start, because if you can resolve it without having to make a law, all the better. And then, you know, and then there is that step that if it doesn't work, you try it and doesn't go through, then that's when you go to the state and you try and make it effective there. And if it doesn't work, then you try for your national policy.
One of the things that I did in preparing for tonight's Tuesday topic was to take a look at some listings that I found on the internet of some of the state initiatives that people had tried for this year that related to disability. And I don't think I looked at an exhaustive list, but some of the areas that people were working on was kind of interesting. There were three states that actually passed legislation, and this, by the way, brings us up to 16 states that suggests that state government needs to comply with Section 508. And that actually moves us in a huge direction towards assuring that information within those states will in fact be accessible. And that was in the states of Arizona, Oklahoma, and Virginia. Interestingly enough, 13 states before this year had actually already implemented some form of legislation like that. One other interesting state initiative that didn't pass nearly as often, several states this year tried to set up loan funds to enable people with disabilities to get access to assistive technologies. And some of the state laws actually allowed for outright grants to people with disabilities. Others set up funds where low interest or no interest loans would be available. And still others tried to set up what amounted to technology exchanges. And I think that's another good idea, because there probably is enough assistive technology within each state to make trying to set up some systems to assure that it doesn't lay idle in the state is a really good idea. So we've so far talked about some of the elements that might be appropriate for state legislation. We've talked a little bit about some of the things that we can do at the local level and some of the things that can be done at the national level. Maybe it might be interesting to talk about what the impact of the recent elections might be in our opinion, and how that impacts what we as people with disabilities can look forward to over the next few years.
I think one of the things we face, regardless of what party holds the majority in the House and the Senate and what party holds the presidency, is that many times, because we are a low-instance minority, our issues are not seen as broad-based enough to really matter to a significant majority of constituents. What we have to show them is that dollars spent in implementing our issues, whatever that issue might happen to be, are dollars saved, because ultimately more money will be spent to try to deal with the problems that having lack of that issue may cause. Spending a little money on us to enable us to get out into the workplace and to pay taxes is better than keeping us on SSI or SSDI indefinitely.
I don't know that it's a matter which party is actually in, because when it comes to issues that have dealt with the blind in the past that we've tried to do here, you know, it's half a dozen, one half to the other, as far as whether it's a Democrat or Republican support, and it's kind of 50-50. What I see is going to be the issue of getting anything accomplished is if it's money-related. Like here in Georgia, we're getting ready to put forth a proposal for deaf-blind services, for specialized services, because we feel like there's, even though we've done several things in the state, they're still the most underserved group. One of the other things we're working on is some guide dog legislation. In other words, it's more of an educational thing. We want to have a law that standardizes what happens when you go in to apply for a business license, and that is that you be given information right up front about access for service animals into your business, and that you sign off saying you understand it before you're even given your license.
For the first time in an awfully long time, and really by a substantially different margin, the disability community this year actually voted 6% in favor of George Bush. And what's also significant is that 52% of those disabled people who were registered to vote actually did cast their ballots this year. And that's actually encouraging, because that's up from 41% in the year 2000. So what that means, at least to me, is that we are becoming more of a force in politics. And it will be interesting to see whether in trying to look at developing and implementing some legislation for his second term, George Bush will take the disability community more seriously, because of the fact that they really have become now a pretty powerful constituency voting in his favor, with probably 20 or 25 million of his votes coming from people with disabilities. So that's one thing for us to think about. Another thing that I would at least like to put on the table is, while we're tiptoeing around the issue, I think that it actually may make an awful lot of difference which party, in fact, controls the House and the Senate and the presidency. And the fact that all three are controlled by Republicans this session suggests that what happened last session may well continue to happen unless President Bush has recognized and determined that, in fact, he needs to do a better job of pandering to a larger minority. So I think we really need to push that minority issue. What am I talking about? What's happened? Well, I think that clearly there has been an effort on the part of the last administration to appoint judges to courts who have traditionally ruled against people with disabilities all through their careers, and who would be likely to narrow the definitions of the Americans with Disabilities Act, and therefore make less available under the law for folks with disabilities. Less government, which is a core value of the Republican Party, is probably going to impact the poor and the disabled more than it is any other group. And if we go in a direction that will substantially alter the Social Security system by following President Bush's recommendation that the Social Security system allow people to, in fact, invest their dollars and borrow against things, and a range of other proposals that would have the effect of privatizing and lessening the government's role in the Social Security system, I think we're going to be in a very serious state of things. I think we're already seeing what the impact of our changing economy is at the state level as well. Debbie pointed out that very many states now are running substantial deficits, and there is much less room for welfare legislation in states where there are deficits than there is for legislation to be sure that there are enough prisons. One of the things that has meant this year in particular, and there's some fascinating studies out there, is that the coverage that impacts a huge number of those of us who are blind, that is Medicaid dollars, are being substantially limited in states, and eligibility for Medicare is in fact being limited to a smaller and smaller group of people. So in all of these ways, I think that we who are disabled, and by extension we who are blind, are facing a very tough road over the next little while, and are going to have to work very hard, I think, to make certain that our voices are heard and to make sure that our issues remain on the front burner.
Well, yeah, we could be going through tough times because of the deficits that the federal deficit. There'll be not as much money for these issues, and the states will have problems too. So, I think from statewide, we'll have a rough time for those who live in the different states. Getting their needs met.
I'm going to play devil's advocate a little bit, Paul. As far as the ADA and court decisions, even before Bush was in, we weren't faring very well, and that was under a Democratic thing. So, I don't know that, but I do agree with the fact that it's going to get more. Well, I don't know what the word I want, but I think you're right. I think the push will be more towards states' rights, state rights, that kind of thing. But I just, to say that because it's all Republicans and the court problem, some of that stemmed back even under Clinton's time.
Because of the fact that there's going to be more state rights and more state autonomy, that in many ways, because we've said that working legislatively within our state is somewhat easier because you can have that jump-off point from the local, that we can use that to our advantage. And that is not to excuse anyone from doing the right thing, whether they be Republican or Democrat, but we can take what we have learned and take the state's rights and the state empowerment and use it to our benefit. The other thing that I would say is that, yes, we certainly do have unique needs as people who are blind and visually impaired with our unique sensory impairment, but there are certain issues in which we can form coalitions and work together with other people, whether it be AARP or people who are deaf or people who are in chairs or whatever. And what I would recommend is whenever possible, whenever our issues can be protected and clearly seen and clearly acted upon, we should coalesce and we should talk among ourselves as we're doing now and urge our affiliates to become even more active in their states and become known by the governing bodies that govern those states, because that's where a lot of the work is going to get done, I think, over the next 4 to 8 years.
It isn't always bad for it to be decided it's a state issue, because I know here in Georgia there are certain laws that Georgia has enacted that go above and beyond the ADA and are much stricter even than the ADA. So I think you're right, Debbie. I think because of the fact that you're talking more community and having access to our legislators because they are our community, that certainly makes a difference. And I think that if we work together, and not just with disability groups, but like as you said, with other groups, that sometimes that can be a better thing.
Alice, let me start by acknowledging the fact that you're absolutely right. The Americans with Disabilities Act has been interpreted by the courts long before the Bush administration came into power in lots of negative ways, and we might spend another whole week talking about why that in fact is. But I'm not going to back off from my opinion that while there have certainly been bad court decisions that were arrived at before the Clinton administration left office that relate to the ADA, I don't think that Clinton was appointing people to the federal bench or to the Supreme Court who were openly anti-disability, as a number of the appointees that Bush recommended for those courts was. And I think that without commenting on whether he's right or wrong to do that, I think what we can expect is as more of those appointments happen and as a more conservative jurisprudence arrives on the bench at the national level and in the Supreme Court, our issues are going to be far less easy to sell at the court level and the decisions are likely to be much worse. Nevertheless, I think that you were perfectly correct to chastise me for not speaking very clearly and for clearly not recognizing that the Clinton administration could have done a good deal more to make the ADA more of a success than they did. And many of the decisions that narrowed the applicability of the ADA occurred in Clinton's watch. So you're absolutely correct about that.
George Bush Sr. is the one that signed the original ADA bill. But I guess that disabled groups are more nervous, I think, when Republicans and conservatives get in because they are their ideas offer less government and they want to cut programs and I suppose we tend to be in favor of the programs that we need and we're concerned when they want to cut programs because we figure that they're going to cut ours.
Paul, I think what it goes back to for me is that you said it. More people in the disabled community voted for Bush. There were more people actually out voting, or at least a good percentage of people in the disability community voted for him. I don't think we voted for him because of where he stands on our disability issues. I think there were other issues as a whole. But what it tells me is I'm going to go to him and say, if I feel like he's not looking out for my interest, that, hey, you know, I supported you on the issues and I trusted you with some of the issues as a whole, but I expect you to hold up, you know, and do what your father did and stay right with you know, what your father did when he signed the ADA.
I think we're actually approaching the end of tonight's program, and what I'd like to ask folks to do perhaps is talk about a final thought that you might have on this issue. I think Alice's point that was last made is an excellent one. I think that the disability community went from 41% to 52% voting. That's an increase of 11% or actually of 25% or a 25% increase in the number of folks who voted, i.e. 41% to 52% actually adds another 25% of voters who are disabled, which is, I think, very significant. And it does make us, I think, more of a group to be reckoned with, and we need to find ways to utilize that newly arrived at power. So, final thoughts, Gary.
Well, for those in conservative positions, that those conservatives, I think we could try to convince them, if we could, that our opinions would help them save money in the long run. For the every dollar spent to help the disabled, they'll get more money back in the long run by people working and paying taxes and contributing to society as a whole.
Matt, any final thoughts, sir?
Whether it's a Democrat or Republican president or whatever it may be, they all have to take a look at not just the issues that are plaguing society, but also some issues that the blind people are concerned, us blind people are concerned about. My final thought is I think that personally, it's going to take, it won't take these 4 years that are left, but it's going to take a lot more than that. I think it's going to take, you know, quite a few years before we actually get to that point. But I have a feeling I think we're going to get there. It's just going to take some time.
Miss Deborah.
Some of us can look at the cup as half empty, and some of us can look at the cup as half full. I think it's very exciting that people with disabilities went out to vote, and it shows that we have better, rounded, more fulfilled lives because we looked at many issues, not just the issues that directly concern us, when we placed our ballots in the ballot box. And I think that's true whether we voted for Mr. Kerry or whether we voted for President Bush. And I think that is a very good thing. I think that working locally and statewide during these next 4 years is key to our success nationally.
Miss Alice.
I think maybe at the national level, ACB, to do more to help those affiliates. I think that was a good idea and point, like what you talked about with the white cane and what GDUI has done. I would like to see more of that, certainly. I'm excited even about the upcoming legislation because we do have a lot going on here in Georgia. And you guys talk about how tough you think it is at the national level. Just think about us here in Georgia. We went totally Republican for the first time since Reconstruction. So it should be an interesting 4 years.
to some degree, we achieved something quite wonderful, which is to substantially increase the proportion of people with disabilities who voted. And I think that's exciting and appropriate and important. Did we focus so much on getting disabled people to go out and vote that we forgot to look at the issues? And perhaps, did the Democrats take people with disabilities and their vote too much for granted because of the lopsided kind of results that Democrats had from the disabled vote in 2000 and even more in 1996? I think these are really important questions, and I think both political parties are going to need to take a good hard look at how they deal with what is becoming a force in politics in the United States. We as the disability community, on the other hand, have to try to learn ways that we can more effectively utilize the power that we have, develop relationships with Republicans as well as with Democrats. I think that in general, the disability community has done a far better job at establishing good relationships with Democrats, and it's absolutely crucial that we begin to work on trying to change the Republican Party by providing it with a good, strong dose of disability input. Ladies and gentlemen, I think the topic has been fascinating tonight. I appreciate all of you listening in. I appreciate all who participated on Tuesday Topics this evening with their good ideas and their strong suggestions of where we go from here. Thank you very much for joining us this evening. Look forward to seeing all of you next week. Thanks very much, and good night. Next week on Tuesday Topics, we'll be exploring the issue of Braille. Why is Braille not being taught in schools? What impact did the Braille bills that passed in several states have on the effectiveness of the teaching of Braille in schools? What's happening with Braille competency testing? What is IDEA having to say about Braille? And what about adults learning Braille? Can they do it? Should they do it? How should we teach it? What are rehabilitation teachers doing? What are counselors doing? And in general, what is happening with Braille as it is being taught and implemented throughout the United States and perhaps even North America or the world if we have folks from those places. The literacy of people who are totally blind comes through Braille. Join us next week to help us explore whether blind people are becoming more or less literate.